The phrase Good Samaritan is probably one of the best known biblical phrases, even for people who have never opened a Bible. Somebody who helps, even when they don't have to, or even when it's inconvenient, we know is a Good Samaritan. Sometimes there's danger and inconvenience. And there's the Good Samaritan. Today, even though there are multiple lessons to be learned from this account, we're going to look at some of the secondary characters. Probably some that we can identify with. Not the Good Samaritan. The ones who we are taught were failures. As much as we like it, we will not always be the hero in every one of our stories. So what does failing look like for a Christ follower? A couple of things first about text and context. Luke 10, verses 31 and 32. Now, by chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, he came to that place and saw him and passed by on the other side. Now, the road from Jericho to Jerusalem is pertinent in the story because the terrain of the road makes it dangerous. It's rocky, it's steep. It's known to be a route excellent for thieves to hide, ambush travelers, and then easily escape into the hills. But it was the route that they needed to take. Here's another contextual point, or something to wonder. Why does Jesus mention both the Levite and a priest? Isn't it good enough to just have one bad guy and one good guy? It's like the current car commercial. Things are better in threes. Most of the time, we don't have either or. Yes or no, black or white. Even in this simple illustration, there are at least two concerns of those who've passed by. Two good reasons to keep on walking. Religious law necessitated that the priest not come in contact with a dead body. Could not do his job if he had been in the presence of a dead body for at least a week. So, guess he didn't want a week off. There was also the risk that this was a setup, that the robbers were still nearby, a true threat and a personal safety for the Levite. The Levite was a temple assistant, like John here. So, Pastor Pat and John, our worship assistant, and a few others, maybe Betty and Sean, were witnesses to a serious auto accident on the way to church. And Pat says, if I stop, I'll be late for church, and I might get my suit dirty. I have obligations and responsibilities. And she drove by on the far lane. And John sees the accident and says, if I stop, I'll be exposed to blood, fire, danger. It's dangerous standing out in the middle of the road. I might get hit too. I can't. I won't take that personal risk. And he turned and went by in the far lane. People not concerned with risk, not being concerned about being late for church, stop. Call 911, offer the use of their cell phone. They speak calm into the trauma. So who's the neighbor? Who showed mercy? Not Pat, not John. The others are the ones who showed mercy. But the others aren't always perfect either, right? We can identify with all the characters. Fred Craddock is an established New Testament scholar, and he explained it this way. Painting unnecessarily unattractive portraits of the priest and the Levite greatly weaken the story. The behavior of the priest and the Levite were certainly not commendable, but neither was it without reason. Maybe we show mercy to them, too. It is appropriate when talking about failing to have a little lesson in Reformed theology, something confusingly called total depravity. It's not that we're all nasty people 100% of the time, but we are never going to be perfect. It's hard for us even to consistently choose the better of two things. This helps explain why God's grace is our hope for forgiveness, that any type of work-based merit system for salvation is going to fall short, because we will always fall short. We will always miss the mark. We will choose unwisely. Not always, but without a doubt. We will all live with poor choices. Maybe even feel shame in a wise choice, like not wanting to be late or not standing in the middle of a busy street to direct traffic around an accident. When Jesus says, go and show mercy, he wasn't condemning the priest. He wasn't condemning the Levite. He didn't call them out as sinners or losers. He acknowledged their behavior and also a better behavior. Last Sunday morning, after most of you had left, the door intercom rang, and I didn't have the monitor on, but I was thinking, oh, Lisa left her coffee mug, or somebody left their Bible or their umbrella. Instead, it was a man asking to speak to a pastor or somebody. And I said, through the intercom, I'm sorry, nobody is available. Pastor, you lie. And he said, not even you? And I said, nope. And he expressed disbelief and disappointment, and then proceeded to the congregational church and also approached the employees at the referral center next door when they were outside on their break. And I did feel shame. We know often people at our door or in our parking lot are going to ask for money. And for me, it's hard to look somebody in the eye and deny. The policy here, so you know and you can say, we don't give out cash. It's not sustainable due to the great need in our community, and it makes us all a little more vulnerable. But it's hard, because what would Jesus do? So it's hard to hear Jesus' message, go out of your way to be helpful, knowing when we don't, we are more like the lawyer, the priest, the Levite, than that good Samaritan. But like I said, read it carefully. There's no shaming by Jesus of the Levite or the priest or even the lawyer, who, if you read in Matthew, is trying to trick Jesus. We infer the shame and the guilt. Jesus says mercy and kindness is better. Giving is loving, and loving is giving, and be the good guy, be the good Samaritan. But also know, as Christ followers, we receive mercy too. We said it. We are forgiven for what we've done and what we've left undone. And Jesus understands that we have conflicts. What's good? What's better? What's necessary? What's wonderful? I'm pretty sure refusing to help somebody financially at our door, or not stopping at an accident scene, is probably not the most shameful thing any of us have ever done. We are loved, we are forgiven by the fully human, fully divine Lord of all. We've probably all heard the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept what I cannot change, the courage to change what I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I've recently seen two variations of that. One is, give me the courage to change what I cannot accept. I like that. Give me the courage to change what I cannot accept. And the other is especially pertinent to this reflection on getting things wrong. It's written by a woman named Eleanor Brown. God, grant me the serenity to stop beating myself up for not doing things perfectly. The courage to forgive myself because I'm working on doing things better. And the wisdom to know that you already love me just the way I am. Eleanor Brown. There's another woman writer named Brené Brown that we'll be hearing from this month too. She writes basically self-help books, gives podcasts from a Christian worldview, and I especially appreciate her book, Rising Strong. There's a copy of it on the table back by the new baptismal font to look at, and it's widely available from booksellers. The church library will soon have that copy. So what recently or profoundly has taken your spirit down that you need to be rising strong? I won't ask for witnesses or testimonies, but if I ask right now, I bet you could tell me what was the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad thing that you have dealt with. Some of you would cry at the memory, or you might hang your head in embarrassment, guilt and grief and pain and shame can overwhelm us. You're forgiven. Our assurance of pardon of God's grace, we proclaimed peace. You made a mistake. You've messed up. Maybe even messed up royally. You've done or experienced something that can never be undone. Admitting your struggle is what Brené Brown calls the reckoning. It's the first step in rising strong. It begins the reset, the transformation. She writes, rising strong after falling must be a spiritual practice. And the first part about rising strong is knowing that you've fallen, that you can get up. We've fallen and we can get up. And we decide to initiate that process. Brené Brown writes, do you want to write the story, or do you want to hand that power over to someone else? Choosing to write our own story means getting uncomfortable. It's choosing courage over comfort. Like the original Good Samaritan, choosing courage over comfort. The lawyer chose legalism, the Levite and the priest chose obligation and safety. By checking ourselves, we demonstrate courage. So consider your choices and your failings and your fallings. I know it's hard. Embrace your feelings. Brené Brown writes, denial of emotion is what feeds the dark. Give yourself permission to feel emotion. Get curious about it. Pay attention to it and practice. This work takes practice. Awkward, uncomfortable practice. And she continues, the most difficult part of our stories is often what we bring to them, what we make up about who we are and how we are perceived by others. Yes, she writes, maybe we lost our job or screwed up a project But what makes the story so painful is what we tell ourselves about our self-worth and our value. So I say this to anyone and everyone who is listening or will listen. As children of our gracious God, our worth, our value is incredible. We are created and loved by the creative, loving God of the whole universe. But we are not God's only children. I learned it as a preschooler. Jesus loves the little children, all the children of the world. In the future, I think people are going to evaluate how Christians dealt with the humanitarian crisis at our southern border. Currently, we're the Levites and the priests passing on by. And children are caring for other children, and adults are crowded into fenced areas so small they can't even all lie down at the same time. And we know this, that Christ's followers are speaking up. The PCUSA is a member of Church World Service. We are represented by this 73-year-old humanitarian organization. It represents 37 Protestant, Anglican, and Orthodox communions. So Church World Service has been urging Congress to protect immigrant children, to defend U.S. asylum law, and to uphold the established screening processes. The American Association of Pediatrics has found that the family detention facilities do not meet basic standards for children, and no child should be in a detention center or separated from their parents. I know it's political. I know it's controversial. I think personally and collectively, it's time to be the Good Samaritan. And it's time for reckoning. God, give us the courage to change what we cannot accept. God, help us. Amen.